This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP President, Money Manager, Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Invest Talk, February 4th, 2015. We're here to stand by your side as you plan your retirement. We call this above average investing for the average investor. You don't have to invest like the average investor. You can do better. Now, you can get better performance from your investments and chances. You can also reduce the risk at the same time. There's things that you can do. It's been proven over and over and over again that people buy at the wrong time and sell at the wrong time. So how do you become better than that? Above average investing, how do you do that? So here's a question for you. How should lower oil prices influence your decisions? Now, if you don't know the answer to the question, you should join us this Saturday at the San Jose Hyatt House. It's our Saturday Morning Wealth Conference. We've been talking about it. Looks like seats are filling up pretty fast. So what single event has made the most significant effect on the global economy this year? Of course, you can think of all sorts of things, from Europe, the Middle East, to Greece, weakening currencies. You've got to believe that low oil prices right up there as to what was significant. I mean, they've been cut in half of only, what, I think July? Since July. The oil prices have corrected more than 50%. So what are the sectors and companies that are most likely to gain? Which ones are we done with the fall of oil prices? Is it done going down? What industries and companies use oil as a raw material to make things? And aren't they going to benefit from lower costs? But wait a minute, what the oil price factor is important that alone should not be the basis for investing decisions. Oil price factor, what's going on in the oil industry. That shouldn't be just because the oil is cut in half doesn't mean you go out and start buying oil companies. That's not how you should treat this. There are other factors to consider. And we're going to spend 3 hours doing that. That's coming up Saturday morning. We're going to dig into this issue pretty in-depthly. So, and we're going to give you a bunch of stocks that are in danger, a bunch of stocks that looks like opportunities. You'll be given a handout with a number of them on the handout that we're going to talk about. So you'll leave with a good idea of the pitfalls and the opportunities. That's this Saturday at San Jose Hyatt House. That's February 7th. This is kind of a final push. The seats are filling up pretty fast. If you plan on attending, you should sign up now. The upside of lower oil prices. You can do that on investtalk.com. 888-99-CHARGE, how to reach us during this hour. Let's answer this question that came up before beginning of the show.
I'm in the process of rebalancing my 401k portfolio. My question is, do I rebalance equally between the 9 mutual funds in which I own, or do I rebalance between the sectors, and the sectors that I have is large, mid, small cap, international, and a blended retirement date fund? Thank you, and I'll be listening on the internet. Have a nice night.
You rebalance on the sectors, not on the funds. It doesn't matter what funds you own. It matters on what parts of the market you own. And what happens is the parts of the market that collapsed last year or now from a year ago are the ones you're going to want to add to, and the parts that really skyrocketed for you, you want to cut back. Because every year, there's different leaders in different sectors. So you want to take some profits off the ones that did really, really well, and you want to add to those sectors that did poorly. That's what rebalancing is all about. You're trying to buy low and sell high. That's what that's all about. How to prevent you from rebalancing helps you do what you're supposed to do, as opposed to people buying when the market collapses and they're scared and they sell when the market's low, and then people who buy more when the market's high and just dumps in everything they can, more and more and more as it goes up. They're buying high, selling low. Well, when you rebalance, you're doing just the opposite. You're selling those things that are really high and buy in those sectors that are really low. Okay? 888-99-CHART is our number. January was a pretty unusual and exciting month for the financial markets. Lots of volatility. Lots of January's market volatility. Blip or omen? That's going to be our main talking point. Also, I want to talk about jobs. I had the ADP employment number out today, and we're going to have the official number out Friday. So I want to talk about some of the economic statistics we're seeing this week. It's been a big week already of a lot of numbers, so we'll talk about that. Currency volatility is at a 20-year high. So that kind of ties into our January market volatility, currency volatility. You know, and why should we worry about that? Well, there's the things going on that could be detrimental to the United States, and I think we want to explore that a little bit. And Russia's cash hoard is ballooning up despite lower oil prices. Remember, their whole economy is based on oil, basically. And lower oil prices does not help them. It hurts them badly. So why are their cash hoard ballooning up? That's what we're going to talk about. What do you want to talk about? The market was mixed today. The Dow was up 8. The Nasdaq was down 11. And S&P was down 9. It was kind of mostly on the weak side today. There was a point where everything was up a little bit. And a point that everything was down. But just kind of a sideways to nothing day. But more on the weaker side than the stronger side. So that was the market today. So remember, one day means nothing. But what we're seeing is the market itself has been kind of in a trading range for the last couple of months. Up and down, not breaking out, not breaking down. It bounced off a pretty significant double bottom and now made a triple bottom just a couple, 3 days ago. Remember, shot up really high day before yesterday and yesterday. And that was right from a really strong support level. And the question was, is it going to break below that and then give us a significant correction, or is it going to find support there and break up? And it broke up. Now it's going to come up against resistance level. It's been doing that for 2 months. We'll see. You know, until it breaks out, we just don't know what direction it's going to go. We just don't have a clear. You have to say that you're not in a bear market. That's, you know, until you see a direction, it's got to break down before you can say something like that. So we're not seeing a bear market, but we're also not seeing a continuation of the bull market. Remember the Dow theory we talked about yesterday? The highs have never been broken, but it's still in the trading range, but it's got to break that most recent high made in December before you can say, okay, we're still in the bull market phase. And many of the Dow theorists think we are on the opposite side of that equation. Okay, kind of interesting. Be sure to sign up to become an InvestTalk Insider. You'll get instant access to a whole list of chart lessons showing many of the classic patterns. It's always free. Sign up on InvestTalk.com. InvestTalk.com with two T's. 888-99-CHART is how you reach us right now with your money topic on InvestTalk. We want to hear your questions on InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART, the market has been unusually volatile in January. Did you know that 3/4 of the trading days for the Dow Jones, it moved up or down 100 points or more? That's kind of unusual. We don't have that. But not just the equities market was unusually volatile. Also, the treasury market was unusually volatile. Also, the currency market was unusually volatile. And what we're seeing is, you know, from the 2008-2009 crisis, that financial crisis, most of the world was on board going in the same direction, trying to get the liquidity back in the world economy. That's not so. One of the biggest economies, or if not the biggest economy, the U.S., is going a different route than everybody else. Everybody else in the world is trying to cheapen their currency against each other's currency. And what it has done is driven up our currency because we're not playing that game. We're not trying to lower our currency. Our Fed is thinking about raising rates while every other country is thinking about lowering rates or have lowered rates or did something to try to make their currencies weaker. ECB, $1 trillion QE program. Australia lowered their interest rates today. Everybody's trying to cheapen their currency so that their exports will be, their export part of their economy will grow and making their exports cheaper to everybody else. But if you just think about it for 3 seconds, that can't work. If everybody's doing it, how's that going to work? Everybody's trying to lower the currency. It's a race to the bottom. Well, we're the ones that are going to get the brunt of this because we're not cheapening our currency. So what that means is that our goods and services exported outside our country are going to get more and more and more expensive, and our exports are going to go down. Whereas everybody else's imports to us are getting cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. Now, the one good thing about that is that we are not reliant on exports. That's just a small part of our economic health. Unlike other countries, many countries in Asia and smaller countries around the world, they depend on exports. And then there's a group of companies that depend on higher oil prices because that's who they are. They get oil, or you know, they drill for oil, and that's their main source of income, or some mining products or whatever it is. Those prices of those things are less, and therefore income to their country is less. So they're doing anything they can to lower their currency. 888-99-CHART. This is Invest Talk.
Have you paid a visit to our official website, investtalk.com? There's a recommended book list to enrich your knowledge. How about a classic? Legendary money manager Peter Lynch explains his own strategies for investing and offers advice for how to pick stocks and mutual funds to assemble a successful investment portfolio. You can even order it right there on investtalk.com.
888-99-CHART. InvestTalk is a two-way conversation. But if you have a question between programs, you still can call and ask the question. We'll always play that question on the next program. And here's the number, 888-99-CHART.
This is Chris in Mississippi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a couple questions. First is, can you tell me where you can find 5-year average P.E. ratio? And also, I'd like your thoughts on TJX, what you think might be a good point to get in on that. Could be a good thing to look at. Thank you very much.
Well, getting the 5-year average P.E. ratio is something that's just not out there easily accessible. Why buy it? I buy the data. And I buy a lot of data and download it. And when someone calls, I pull up all these soft pieces of software based on the stock, and I have that available. It is out there. It's just very difficult to put together. If you want to pay for it, I think the best place is probably MarcusSmith.com. But you're going to have to pay for it. I think it's like $50 a month. And they give it to you in all the stocks. You know, basic data information. TJX Companies is from Massachusetts. It operates 3,219 off-price apparel and home goods stores with plans to open 173 more in 2014 through 2015 fiscal year. Okay, so it made $2.83 in 2014. That was up from the previous year, consistently going up. 2015 is going to go from 283 to 314. That's up 11%. Then up another 12% in 2016. Sales growth is very steady at 5, 6, 7%. Okay, so now, therefore, since it's very steady, constantly making money, very predictable, the price of it is fairly high. The 5-year average for this one is 12 to 23. 5-year PE average, I should say, is 12 to 23. And today it's selling at 22. So it's right near the five-year average. So I would wait for a pullback. This chart looks fairly strong. It's chattering like the market for the last month or month and a half. It's going sideways. I'd wait for a pullback. Buy it then. Unless we go into recession, it's going to do well. Okay? That's TJX. Let's go to John in San Diego. How you doing, John?
Fine, Steve. I wanted to ask you about Gilead Sciences. I bought some, you know, a couple of weeks ago at 95, and I was just wondering, what's going up and then it dropped, and you think it's worth to hold or sell, or what do you think?
What happened is Gilead Science, GILD, is a very good, very strong growing company. Very, you know, very good. And you would think it would be, because of that growth, that it would PE be a lot higher than 13. The average is 9 to 37 over the last 5 years, PE average. And it's growing like 100% a quarter. And it's going to make $9.84 this year, up 22%, another $10.85 next year, up another 10%. What's the problem? Problem
well,
is
they said there was news. They said they were going to cut their price of the hepatitis C drug.
That's
and
right.
I was wondering what you had on it.
That's exactly what the problem is. They have the problem. I like Gilead, by the way, John. I've talked about it before. Because,
okay.
But they are dependent on just a couple of drugs. They don't have a big a book of drugs. And those drugs are very, their highest bestseller is very expensive. And it was so expensive, and the company so focused on that run drug, that anything that upsets that drug price, it's going to accept, you know, cause this stock to stop going up. And there were talk about politics getting in the way, that, you know, it's not. So what they did is they took a forward-looking step and said, we're going to cut our price of our most popular drug. Well, that's well and good, but that means you're going to cut profits and growth, too. So that's why it took the dive. I wouldn't sell it, though, based on that. I bet you it recovers in the next week or so. Unless the whole market falls apart. Because really there's no change in the company. They just said they're going to discount it. Maybe, you know, they're going to squeeze out profit margins in another way. I don't know. I don't think it's a cause to sell it, to be honest.
Okay. I don't have a big position in it, so, you know, like you guys always said, spread it around, you know, technology and pharmacy and
that
oil.
Way, yeah,
but
you
can
don't...
I ask you a general question about, like I heard on CNBC, they use the terminology book to bill. What does that mean, book to bill?
Well, they're talking about the billing, that they're booking the sales. Bill means billing, the billing they're doing, and booking it on their balance sheet. They're booking the sales on it. So book to bill. How much are they put on their sheet that they bill that they're actually going to earn?
Oh, I see.
So it's nothing to even worry about. It's just a term.
Yeah, he was talking about like National Oil Well Company. And he said that means something about the rigs, you know. But I was just, you know, I'm not interested in the company, but it just happened to be a terminology I wasn't familiar with, you know.
Yeah. Well, appreciate the call. Thanks, John.
Thanks.
Talk to you soon. Do you know when zero interest rate is not zero interest? That teaser rate? That's coming up next in the next half hour on InvestTalk. On InvestTalk Personal, we're going to talk about zero interest rates. That's not necessarily zero. Do you have a question? 888-99-CHARGE. How to reach me? You can do it right now on InvestTalk. Today's ADP number, do you know ADP is those payroll people. They put out every month their estimate of private jobs produced for the month. And so that came out this morning, 213,000. That was, remember last month, the official number was 253,000 new jobs. And it looks like we might not be able to make that 253,000. The official Dodge report comes out Friday. I don't think it's going to be 253 or higher. It's going to be lower, in my opinion, and it's probably be about 230, 240, hopefully. And why I'm saying that it might be, it's kind of tough because the unemployment claims both in the last 4 weeks both fell to its lowest level in years and popped really high. So it's hard to know. There was no consistency of the number. And the ISM employment gauge, the ISM number, Institute of Supply Managers, has you know, both for service sector and manufacturing sector. And the service sector is the one that's really important to us. And that actually went up overall from 56.6 to 56.7%. Anything above 50 means an expanding economy. The problem inside that report, though, is that the employment gauge inside there went from 55.7 to 51.6. So, and that really is trying to count the number of the manufacturers putting on jobs in the service sector. ISM, Institute of Supply Managers. Supply managers putting on jobs in the service sector. In the manufacturing sector, the overall number was down, not by a great amount, but it was from 56 to 54.1%. So you're getting this kind of mixed signals, weak and strong, weak and strong, and we're quite not sure. I would say we're seeing a little bit of softness overall because last month, the month before, it was strong. Everything would look pretty good, up, 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 up. Now we're seeing numbers coming in for January. They don't look so strong. So we'll see what that relates to jobs. And jobs, you know, remember our economy is 66% driven by the consumer, so we need jobs. We need more and more jobs. We really could use some good jobs, not the crappy jobs that we've I don't want to say they're all crappy, because they're not. Because last month and the month before, there was more good jobs being put on versus the not-so-good jobs. We still have way too many people unemployed, way too many underemployed. But, you know, we're dealing with that, and that's a struggle. And it's going to continue to be a struggle. I don't see how we're going to get out of it, especially with, you know, everybody looking at low oil prices and saying, oh, that's a good thing. Well, it is a really good thing for the consumers, and maybe that will make them spend more money, and that will help our economy. At the same time, have you seen how many job cuts and how much capital expenditures of those the oil industry is cutting? I mean, it's huge. They're cutting big time. That means less work. That means less layoffs. That means not many these are high-paying jobs being cut. So it's not all great news that the oil prices are down 50%. Just letting you know. Now let's get back to work answering your questions. By the way, we'll be going really deep into the subject at our conference this Saturday, so try to make it in San Jose. But, you know, questions are always, we always try to get to them the day after you call or the day of, and the number is 888-99-CHART. Here's a call that came in earlier.
Hi, this is Gary. I'm calling from Massachusetts. I listen to your show on podcast. I have a question on a stock. The symbol is F as in Frank, ISV as in Victor, FishServe. I'd like to know your valuation for that stock. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
FISV, everybody. And that is, well, FISERV, Inc., out of Wisconsin, provides integrated information and electronic commerce systems and services to about 14,500 clients worldwide. It is an $18 billion company, not small, big cap. It has grown very steady, its earnings, 12% last year, 11% next year, that kind of thing. It's done doing that for some time. Sales are, they were growing a little bit faster a year ago, about 8 to 10% per quarter. Now it's 4 to 5% per quarter. But they're still growing their sales. So that's good. Now, what is the price? Is the stock expensive or not? It's at a 52-week high today. Had a nice spike up a little bit today, up $1.30 to $75.79. But if you look at the stock, the low of this a year ago was 55, and ever since then it's been marching up and up and up and up. And it's been a very steady march. I wouldn't chase it at this point. The P/E ratio now is 22. The five-year range of its P/E is 11 to 22. That's why I had the high range. Very good company. Great return on equity, 25%. Management owns 3% of the company. I mean, there's nothing wrong with this company. It's really good. But I just wouldn't chase the performance. Now, if you really think you want to get in it because it's good, new 52-week high, and there's an argument to buy something that's making new highs, buy maybe half your position now. At least you'll be in it if it continues to run up. But I don't like to chase performers. I like to give me some kind of discount. And you're not buying this stock at a discount. You're buying this at premium. Okay? Time for InvestTalk Personal, about the day-to-day money decisions with lasting impact on your personal finances. When 0% interest isn't 0%. Now, how can you pass it up? You are given an amazing offer. Why pay the full amount now on a purchase when you can just finance it for 0% interest and then pay it off 12 months from now? Why not do that? Wouldn't you be dumb not to do that? You're using somebody else's money for free, right? Well, we're really talking about deferred interest. Okay, forget about the 0%. It's deferred. When you take out a deferred interest financing, which is this 0% down, 0% pay no payments for 12 months, when you're talking about that, really what you're doing is you're opening up a credit line or a credit card, and the interest rate on that card could really kill you. It could be 22%, 26%. Okay, but when you buy an item for $1,000, you owe $1,000, right? But they say there's 0% interest on that for 12 months. Well, the balance would be accrued about $19 worth of interest. That interest is deferred by 12 months, for the whole 12 months. So by that time, it's $205 for a $1,000 item that you purchased. Okay? Now, how to avoid paying any interest is you have to make the complete payment, pay off that balance before the 12 months. It's like anything else on a credit card. If you pay it off in the month, you don't have to pay interest on it, right? Anything you charge. The same thing for the 0% interest offers. You won't have to pay any interest unless you don't pay it off at the time. Then you're going to get hit with all the interest. All of it. So avoid it by make sure you can pay it off. But it's not 0% interest. Don't get teased in thinking that. And what they're hoping is there will be enough of you out there who won't be able to pay it off, and they'll make the money on on those who can't pay it off. They'll make all their money on that person or those few people. It's fine with them. Now, do you have a question on this topic or any money matter? You can just give me a call at 888-99-CHART. Leave a message. You can also send me a note. That will come directly to me. Just click Contact Steve on InvestTalk.com or at InvestTalk on Twitter.
You can listen on the go with our TuneIn Radio app. It works on your iPhone or Android. Use the link to hook up on InvestTalk.com.
Hi, Steve. Brett from Wisconsin. Listen to you on the podcast. Just had a quick question. I was considering quitting my job and going to school to get my MBA. I have a good amount of money in a 401k here at work, and I was wondering if it'd be possible to roll that 401k over into an educational plan like a 529 for myself. I'm not sure if that's possible or not, but would be curious if I'd be able to do that for my tuition. Thanks a lot.
I don't think you can do that, but there might be something in the law about using your 401k or IRA money for educational purposes. I think there might be something in there. But you know what? You need to talk to an accountant. I am not the expert in this area. But I do know you can use IRA and 401ks for certain things, emergencies, and or even buying a house. But there are certain rules you got to comply with. And I think higher education might be something that you could use it for, but I'm not sure. Just not sure. So I would check that out with an accountant before you do anything and see what they have to say. Okay? Good question, though. And I do think it's smart to get an MBA. I mean, you know, these days, bachelor's of arts or science degrees are easy to, everybody gets them. A lot of people. Remember, you're competing with other people out there in the workforce. So an MBA just puts you a little step higher. You know, you have an MBA in a certain field, you know, people will look at you a little bit. It opens more doors. Let's put it that way. It will open more doors for you. Okay, currency volatility is at 20-year high. We talked about volatility of currencies, the market, and everything else. But specifically, targeting currency volatility And I mentioned earlier that different countries are trying to weaken their currencies. Singapore, Switzerland, Australia, the ECB. And we have what everybody is referring to as a currency war going around. So the idea is to make your currency weak so your exports will be high. Okay? So that you can grow your economy and add jobs to it. But when everybody's trying to weaken their currency, it doesn't work. And what it will do is this will reduce world trade. It will close up markets because if it gets out of control, this is what happened in the Great Depression, by the way. Everybody decided we don't need anybody else, and they folded up their tent and charged huge tariffs and stopped world trade from happening. And, you know, in this day and age, if that starts to take hold, where everybody tries to, you know, protect their own by raising tariffs and restrictions on imports, and you guys are unfair, you lowered your currency unfairly, therefore we're going to block you, or you're trading unfair, yeah, on and on and on and on, you start catching that, you know, everybody starts catching that little fever, trying to protect their own little economic system, that's going to cause a worldwide recession. That's what that will do. It's pretty obvious that it would. So you won't hear centrists evaluate the currencies by lowering interest rates, and they'll all talk about, well, we're not doing this because we want to, you know, we're having a currency war. We're doing this to try to spur our economy. Well, what you're really doing is devaluating your currency against other currencies. And then the U.S. is the only one not doing it. We're not doing it right now. Believe me, we've done it in the past. Don't think we're lily white here. No, we did that in the past. But not now because, you know, our economy is one of the strongest ones out there. And our Fed is thinking about raising rates. I don't think they're going to do it. I think they're not going to raise rates. Because I don't think that they need to or should in the face of what's going on in the world economics right now. Now, it could change 6 months from now. It could be different. And the Fed is targeting 6 months from now. So maybe things will be different then. Okay? Let's take a question. Do you already do that question, guys? Oh, okay. Let's take a question from our podcast subscribers. They call the same number, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve. It's Kevin in Vancouver. I listen to you on the podcast. Been a long-time listener. I did my first big mistake. I bought my first story stock. I don't know why I bought it. It's C-A-L-L. That's Magic Jack. And now I'm stuck with this thing. Pretty much went down as soon as I bought it. So just wondering when I should get out. What do you think? How long should I hang on to this thing or just get out now? Okay, thanks. Bye.
Okay, Magic Jack Vocal Tech, Israel, a provider of carrier-class multimedia, voice-over-internet software, that kind of thing. They are a $127 million company. Einsy-tainsy, very, very small. Sales growth is anemic, shrinking. So this was not a stock you probably should have been buying. You know, you have earnings in 2013 of $2.89 a share, and you think, that's great. Then in 2014, it's going to be 52 cents a share, and then rebound in 2015 to 81 cents. Well, how are you going to do that with your sales shrinking? Okay, it looks cheap because the P.E. ratio is 4, based on, and a five-year P.E. range is 4 to 108, and it's right at the bottom. So you'd say, that's pretty cheap. It's a $7 stock. Okay, well, it's really not 4. If it makes 52 cents a share this year, it, you know, that P.E. of that, $7 a share, is what, 13? That's really what the P.E. is. And, you know, it's a really tiny company. Those companies tend to go out of business. I'm not saying this one will. Doesn't have any debt. Looks pretty darn good. You know, cash flow is good. It's got some positives. It really does. Right now, I'd probably hold on to it. I hate to tell you that because it's just, if it falls below its recent low about 3 or 4 days ago, then I'd probably get out. If this is because it looks like it might find support in here. So let's see. But if it drops below that recent low just a few days ago, I'd be out. You're listening to Invest Talk. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley. If you're looking for a money management solution, I hope that you would consider us, KPP Financial. We have a number of different programs that would suit everybody. You know, try to do a broad spectrum. and depending on your risk tolerance and your diversification that you want. How much risk do you want? That's KPP Financial. That's our firm. Go to InvestTalk website.
Our InvestTalk podcast distribution is made possible by KPP Financial, and we thank you for subscribing to our podcast. If you have a question on any money topic, it's time to check in now or anytime at 888-99-CHART, or make it a personal note that will come directly to Steve. Just click on Contact Steve on InvestTalk.com.
888-992-4278. We have been talking about volatility in both the markets and the currencies and the ECB. I want to also talk about Russia. You know, Russia has a huge cash hoard. Okay, they're like China because of oil sales over the past years. They've been putting money aside. And so they have the huge cash hoard. And that cash hoard is dramatically increasing despite oil prices collapsing. Why? Because they have a lot of that money in U.S. dollars. And their ruble has collapsed against the dollar. So that looks like they're making lots and lots of money. Remember, you know, they're spending money inside their country using their ruble. So they have increased their cash hoard. They have $85 billion sitting in cash. And that has increased by 919 billion rubles. Well, I'll try to put it in more context. That 919 billion rubles is six times what they borrowed last year. You know how we issue treasuries and bonds and pay for our deficit? Well, Russia has increased their cash hoard by this currency swings by 919 billion rubles, and that's six times the debt they issued last year. So, even though Russia is getting crushed by the collapse of the oil prices, they still have lots of money to try to make it up. In other words, try to cover up, try to smooth over the problems they're having. It's like China, where they have huge overbuilding and debt problems, but they got such a huge amount of cash, they have a lot of flexibility to make it not feel so bad in their economy. Well, so does Russia. So does Russia. They're going to try to, you know, smooth over some of the problems. Russia, you know, think of Russia as a big oil company, because that's basically what they are. That's their main economic engine is oil. And so if they have a big oil company, but they have lots of cash, they can keep running pretty smoothly for a number of years until they run out of cash. Then all of a sudden it becomes a big problem. So that's what you're seeing in Russia. That's what's going on there. The world of investing gets more complex every day, everybody. It's never simple. Currencies make it even more complex, the fluctuations. So you're going to have some questions, and we hope you. I hope you'll feel comfortable enough to give me a call. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Hello, this is Julio Alvarez. Love your program. I just wanted to know if you could tell me what's a good entry point for AT&T, symbol T. Thank you.
Of course, T is one of those big blue chip companies you want to own forever, and you want to see if you can buy it at a discount. And because it pays a huge dividend, 5.5%, and it's probably always going to pay that dividend as long as they're alive. And the dividends have been increasing over the years, so there's no reason to worry. They make money every year in recession, not in a recession. They make a little less money in a recession, but they're, you know, pretty consistent. Up 1% this year, 3% next year. Sales growth is 1 to 2 to 3% per quarter. I mean, just kind of, and you know, it's just because it's huge. It's a $178 billion company. It can't grow very fast, like Verizon. Verizon has a little bit better growth prospects, but so you want to buy AT&T when it's at a discount. The lowest it's been recently is about $32.50. Today it's at $34.41. And you can buy this stock at this range, and I think you'd be fine if it's a long-term blue-chip hold. I hope that's why you're buying it. If you're trying to buy it for just growth that you think it's going to go up, well, this is not the kind of stock that you buy for that. You buy this one for the dividend, 5.5%. looks good. If it comes down to 33, buy more. Okay, so I would buy some here. The high it was been in the last year was about 37.50. Lowest, 32.50. There's your range where it kind of fluctuates. You know, I don't see how it's going to have tough breaking out of that range. Okay, the world of investing gets more complex, everybody, doesn't it? It really does. Before we close for the hour, our room is filling up, but there's still time to claim your seat at this Saturday morning's Wealth Conference, this Saturday morning, the upside of lower oil prices. We're going to give you a number of ideas on what you might want to buy. Put it on your watch list. It's February 7th at the San Jose Hyatt House. Just go to investtalk.com. That's with two T's, investtalk.com. and sign up. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley, and for Justin Klein and everyone at KPP Financial, I thank you for listening today, and we'll talk to you next time.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.